Welcome to episode 220 of Board Game Blitz, a podcast about all things board games that you can listen to in less time than it takes to escape an escape room. Board Game Blitz is sponsored by Gray Fox Games. This week, we're interviewing Jonathan Chaffer, the designer of the Holiday Hijinks series of games from Grand Gamers Guild. First, we discuss a couple Holiday Hijinks games we've played, The Pumpkin Problem, Turkey Trial, and Groundhog Gambit. Then, we chat with Jonathan about his design process and the magic that goes into designing an 18-card escape room game. And now, here are your hosts,
Ambie
and Crystal, with special guest,
Jonathan.
Recently, Crystal and I both got review copies of few games, Holiday Hijinks series. So the Holiday Hijinks games is published by Grand Gamers Guild and designed by Jonathan Chaffer. It's a series of escape room card games that are 18 cards each. And that's it. 18 cards and a web app. And they're also themed around holidays, if you can tell by the name Holiday Hijinks. So we got a bunch of review copies and we played a couple of them. So I played The Pumpkin Problem and The Turkey Trial. So The Pumpkin Problem is based on Halloween. Well, the theme is there's a neighborhood of houses and you're going around to the different houses to see like what was wrong. And each little house has a different Halloween monster person that lives there, which is kind of cute. So it's a cute little theme. And then the turkey trial, you are a turkey and you're trying to escape like Thanksgiving.
you're trying to find a pardon basically on Thanksgiving.
Yeah. And then you're like going around to the other farm animals to like see if they have ideas on how to escape. So the themes are pretty cute and themed around holidays, which is fun. They both say on the back, a 60-minute mystery for one or more sleuths of any age. So the any age, I think you got to be older than at least older than my kids, who are four. It requires like reading and stuff. So the puzzles in both of these. So I like escape room games a lot and I've done some puzzle hunts and stuff. This actually reminded me of puzzle hunts. If you know what puzzle hunts are, they are online or offline puzzles, like usually having to do with words and ciphers, different puzzles. And you do a lot of different puzzles, usually untimed, but sometimes you like compete against other teams and you're trying to do it the fastest, but it's not like an escape room where you have to do it in 60 minutes. So some of the puzzles reminded me of puzzle hunts. There's a lot of different types of puzzles in these 18 cards, which is pretty impressive. But like there's crosswords, riddles, cipher things. There's also things that use codes like Morse code and Braille, and it comes with a web app. So you enter in answers in this web app, and the web app also has info for things you might need. So it has like a Morse code thing or the alphabet, the numbers of the alphabet, like A is 1, B is 2. So it has reference stuff like that to look up, which is good for these types of puzzles. So I enjoyed these because I like puzzle hunts. I'm not very good at puzzle hunts, but this felt like a simpler than a lot of puzzle hunts for me. So it's like my level of puzzle hunt. So it's kind of like a puzzle hunt mixed with escape room. Oh, one other thing. The web app also has hints. So I really like how the hints are broken up. It has a hint for each card. There's 18 cards and a lot of cards have a puzzle on it. And so the cards have like a number or letter. So then the hint will say like, do you want a hint for card H? And then you click on that. And then it's like, okay, I have a question this, I have this question, I have this question. And it has like all these questions broken out. So you can click or you can like skip to what you're actually stuck on instead of having to like click through a bunch of hints or use up a bunch of hints because you already know the first part and are stuck on like the last step or something. So I like how that's broken out. And it does give you a score based on like how much time you took and how many hints you took. Yeah, so overall I enjoyed it and I thought the themes were cute. Most of the puzzles I like, some of them I don't like as much. Sometimes the puzzles I like more than others, and there's all the different types of, a lot of different types of puzzles here. So it's always some puzzles I like a lot more, but I like the theme, it's cute. It's very easy to reset because it's just cards in here. You just put the cards back and then someone else can play it. So the only thing is I don't know like what age kids you could play it with. It does seem family friendly, but my kids can't read yet. So you definitely need to know to read and you need to know like English pretty well because these types of puzzles, you need to know like what makes words and stuff. There's ciphers. A lot of the answers are English words. So you probably want to know English well or be familiar with English puzzles with English words as the answers. So yeah, I don't know what age, maybe like 8 or 9, 10.
Yeah, I think it probably depends on the kid, right? Yeah. And there are in the series there are different difficulty levels, and I agree with you. Like the turkey trial is one of the it's on the easier side. I think mm-hmm. it's a
yeah, it
one
says
out of
one
three.
Out of three. Yeah. And pumpkin problem was 2 out of 3.
Okay, yeah, mm-hmm. And the turkey trial definitely felt more geared towards family. Like the theme mm-hmm. was cute and funny, more so than, like, all of them are appropriate for families, but this one was a little bit more, it felt a little bit like a kid's cartoon, but in a good way, like, because you're a turkey and you're talking to the other animals in the farm. Like, it's kind of like the funny farm part of, like, Garfield and Friends to me, like, where all of the animals are on the farm together. Yeah, but it was, like, it was very cute, and all the animals had names, and it was a neat little, I was like, oh, we're the turkey, like, we're not a person here.
Like, well, for me, the pumpkin problem is what I thought about as family, because my kid's, like, obsessed with Halloween and, like, scary things. But he's also four, so I'm like, oh, I can't play this with my kid because he can't read. But he would probably like looking at the pictures.
Well, and what's great about it is, like you said, it's easy to reset. So you can, you know, stash it away. And when he's a little bit older, he'll probably really enjoy playing it.
I actually have a nephew who's 8 or 9. He's in third grade. But he like recently played his first real life escape room and he loved it. And then he played another one, I think. So I might see if he wants to do these too and see if he likes that. Or I'm not sure if he likes the running around finding part of escape room or like the puzzles. So yeah, I might lend these to him to see if their family likes it.
Continuing on from Ambi, so I've previously played a few of the titles in the Holiday Hijinks line, and I have talked about some of them on the podcast previously. Yep. So if you want to hear my thoughts on the Halloween one or the Kringle Caper.
The Christmas one.
The Christmas one. And I think the Valentine's Day one, I believe, as well, is the other one that I may have talked about on the show previously. But I did also play the Turkey Trial recently. And then I also played the Groundhog Gambit. I was really curious about this one because unlike most of the games, which say they are 60 minutes, this one is 120 minutes. It is a 2-hour, 2-part game, and it's still only 18 cards in the web app. And I was, not that I doubted this could be possible, but like, my mind is already blown by the fact that you can put an entire escape room into 18 cards in a web app. And I was like, how? How do you make this 2 hours? And fans of the movie Groundhog Day might be able to guess what could potentially happen in the story. And I was kind of blown away. One of the things that makes this series most impressive to me is, unlike escape room games where most components are one-time use, and that's not all escape room games, but a lot of them, like, this component does this thing and then you put it aside. Because there's only cards in the web app, the cards end up being used for multiple purposes.
Yeah, I liked that a lot.
Like, you could put them together in a grid to make a giant picture, or they might have things on their backs that you didn't even notice when you first were looking at them that later you have to flip over and examine more closely to find a detail in them. Or along an edge of a card, there might be something there that you have to utilize to solve a puzzle on a different card. And when you come back to things, like, it's things that you will notice and won't notice as you're going through them the first time. And that, to me, is where these get the most impressive, is I believe Jonathan has taken a very small amount of space and utilized it as well as a person probably could, and not lost any of the potential fun or experience that, like, it doesn't feel like a lesser experience to me than most boxed escape room games. Because you all have heard me talk, my favorite escape room game of all time is the Werewolf Experiment, and the reason I like that one so much is because of the cool components that come in it. It has those really fun physical components, and I do love that stuff, but this game doesn't feel less fun for the lack of those.
It's different.
It is a different feel, and to your point, like, the puzzles are also very diverse and unique, and there's a whole bunch of different kinds, so it's not like there's only word puzzles or number puzzles or ciphers. Like, it's a wide variety of different things. So I think for puzzle lovers in general, there's going to be something to be found here. They've got almost, like, all the major holidays, it feels like you've got pretty much covered at this point, but I haven't played through all of them yet. I still have a couple left to do, as well as the new one that Grand Gamers Guild have come out with, which Jonathan didn't design, so I'm gonna have to try that, the Endangered Rescue Galapagos Penguins game at some point as well, and maybe I'll talk about that on a later episode. But yeah, I would say if you all are fans of escape room games and you want to be able to literally slip one into your pocket or your wallet or your purse and have something to do for an hour or potentially 2 hours, these are no-brainers. And they're inexpensive as well. So you can't beat that, honestly.
And they have a Kickstarter right now as this podcast releases.
What? A Kickstarter?
Yeah, it's for like new ones too that we don't know what they are.
Yeah, we are recording this episode in the past for you all that are listening to this. And so, yeah, we don't even have all the deets yet, but we are very excited that there are more games in the series coming soon. And I think the Kickstarter is a really good way to bring awareness to the series because most of these games have been released one at a time over the past few years. And so this will be a nice way to let people kind of get in on all of the fun that has been coming out over the past few years and maybe grab a whole bunch of these at once. All right, so thank you so much for joining us tonight. Jonathan, do you prefer John or Jonathan?
Either is fine. I usually introduce myself as Jonathan because there are fewer of us, so it's less confusing.
That makes sense. I say I grew up in the late 80s and early 90s, and there were a lot of Jonathans when I was growing up.
But they pale in comparison to the number of Johns, I'm sure, that you found.
Yeah, honestly, there are quite a few. Why don't you go ahead and just kind of introduce yourself to our listeners, maybe give a little bit of information about who you are, how you got into game design, and a little bit about how you came to be the designer of the Holiday Hijinks series.
Sure. So it's a common question for people in the hobby about like, when did you start playing games? And it's always a really hard question to answer because, you know, like, what do you mean? I grew up playing games, but not this kind of game, you know? So I guess I would start to play hobby games right around 2000-ish and started dabbling in design not too far after that. I should write down the actual date of like my first protospiel. That would be like probably the benchmark there. But it's been well over 15 years that I've been working on game designs and attempting to get them out there in the world. So I have designed a few smaller card games. There's a game called Filler from Green Couch Games that's about filling pastries, and a game called Stroop, also from Grand Gamers Guild, which is a real-time perception game about the Stroop effect, and a couple more in the works.
I was hoping it was about Stroop waffles because I love Stroop waffles.
Like a lot of people make that connection too. And I when I was promoting, I had a stack of Stroop waffles to hand out to people because
nice,
why not? Yeah, but the Holiday Hijinks thing came about in kind of a weird way. In probably, let's see, the first I believe was 2012 when I was suffering from lack of inspiration of what to put in a Christmas letter and decided that year to print up some copies of a homemade game and send them out to friends and family. Oh. And out of necessity, that had to be something small. So it was just a little game I printed at the Game Crafter, sent out, and then decided to do it again the next year. And then that became a thing. And so I've kind of used it for a few purposes. One, it's a, you know, fun way to send a holiday greeting. And another is kind of as a design exercise or regimen so that I force myself to finish something, even if it's not, you know, perfect. Good enough that I'm not embarrassed by it, that I can send to friends and family every year. So I've been doing that for a dozen years. So every year I'm trying to think of what could I do this time and what can I do that's small. And so I had the idea for my 2020 gift to try to do an escape room. And so the bar wasn't hugely high since it was only going to be for friends and family. And I made a Christmas themed one and put it together and brought it to Protospiel Online, which was a new thing because trying to figure out how to do things remotely.
Shout out to the Protospiel Online community, Heather. Absolutely. And everybody, we are connected to them and we love them very much.
Yes, it's amazing. And so I got it in a digital form and was testing it there, and that's where it got publisher attention. So it wasn't even going to be something I was going to pitch at all. So suddenly it became, okay, can we get this out for Christmas? And this was already probably August.
Oh, wow.
And so I had to revise a bunch of things because there were a bunch of puzzles that, even though they were working fine, either weren't up to the standard that I would want out of a published game or were too personal.
I had some things. You're making it for friends.
I had some geographic references to Michigan and things things like that that didn't make any sense when it's a product. And so there were a bunch of things that had to change, but we did manage to turn that around in a short timeline and get it out for that year. So that went well enough that Mark, publisher, said, well, could we do another one of these? And it could have been anything at that point. And then I made the decision, for good or bad, to make it about 4th of July. And as soon as that happened, well, now they're all about holidays, and that can't go back on that now. So
yep, the rest is history.
Yeah. Because of that weird origin, there are a lot of constraints that I've had to deal with, and you've done a great job talking about most of those already. The fact that it had to be 18 cards for cost reasons now is the form factor for the game. So there are a lot of challenges in getting an hour worth of puzzling in that size, but you know, it's kind of a necessity is the mother of invention kind of thing, where there are a couple things you mentioned, like the fact that cards are used multiple times is sort of a bug and a feature. It isn't something that I would have done had I had enough cards to not have to do it. And it can be positive because it can be a fun moment when you have to go back to something. But if you're at a physical escape room that is designed well, one of the cardinal rules is if you've used a key, you're done with that key. If you've used a thing, don't use it.
Yeah, they usually tell you though.
Because yeah.
Sometimes I like it when they're like things that you can use multiple times. Like the keys, maybe not, but like the clues, or like if there's a map or something, or like something that you use multiple times. I like that a lot. Because it feels more thematic, I think. It like more creative and thematic, I think.
Yeah, it definitely can. It does tend to elevate the difficulty because you can't make certain assumptions.
Yeah, you can't just like throw stuff away.
Yeah. And then other things, like you mentioned, the codes and information that is provided by the app. Normally that would all be stuff in the game, in the room, but there's just not room to put all those things. So there's a little design rule there of putting only things in the information section that theoretically you might know. So it's all real world information. There'll never be an invented code in there. That would always be on a card. So it's kind of, that's my conceit anyway. I don't know that it's really important, but that's what I've been trying to stick to.
Well, I like the fact that the favorite moments for a lot of people, and me included, in escape room style games of any type are those aha moments, right? And in a physical escape room, they often tell you do not need to have any outside knowledge to complete this room. And so sometimes you'll look at something on the wall and somebody will be like, oh my gosh, that looks like a constellation. Which one is it? And it's like, nope, that we don't need to know constellations for whatever that is. Like, don't go down that road. But what's interesting is you're providing lists of things that some people might know, some people might not. And the aha moment still happens because oftentimes you're really good at putting clues into the cards themselves, like bolded words or things of that nature that will point people toward the information they're going to need in the app. And so the aha moment still happens. It's just like, okay, maybe I don't know the periodic table by heart and which element goes with which number, but I can see, oh, this is a science classroom and therefore the periodic table might come into play. And that's the aha moment. So it's, you still get those moments. It's just a little bit different than it would be otherwise.
Yeah, like in the turkey one, I think there was one cipher thing that I hadn't heard of in the information. But then like when I got to it with the card, it had enough story on the card that pointed me to that cipher. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I guess I use this. That's what this is. So that was neat.
Yeah, on the subject of the aha moments, the obvious comparison for any board game, escape room game, are Exit and Unlock. And Exit in particular, the thing that they do, there are some great entries in that series. Designers are wonderful, but they have a thing they do where in every game, there is something that breaks the rules.
Yeah.
And those moments are either the best part or the worst part of the game.
Yeah.
If you figure it out, it is wonderful. If you don't figure out, you're just angry.
So angry.
And so that's a conscious decision in these, is that they sacrifice some of those potential highs to avoid those lows, because I remember being angry more than I remember being excited.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Well, and especially because, for the record, I agree, they are brilliant and their games are super impressive. We've talked about the Exit games ad nauseum in the past, so everybody knows that we love that series. But yeah, like, at a certain point, everybody was opening up the Exit boxes and starting to examine all of the pieces and parts. They're like, where's the hidden thing? Like, looking at every detail in the rule book. Like, oh, let me look at the copyright date. Let me look at, like, and at a certain point, it's like the meta almost overrides then the fun of discovery to some degree.
Yeah, and you mentioned that there are some games now that I'm not designing that I'm doing development on. So the Endangered Rescue games, for example. And so we're trying to set in stone some of these principles that have been kind of just in the back of my head before. And one of them is basically playing fair.
Don't break the rules.
Yeah, you really should. You want to avoid the I would never have thought of that in a million years moments, which is tough to do and still have things that are exciting to play.
Yeah, because you don't want things to be too obvious, but you also don't want them, you don't want people sitting there frustrated the whole time either. And I think striking that balance in any game where you know that players of varying skill levels and knowledge levels are going to be playing it, like, that threading that needle has got to be a really difficult task. So, like, good for you, because honestly, most of these have felt, I would say, like, relatively balanced. Like, the puzzles don't seem crazy hard. They don't seem super easy. Like, they really, I think a lot of them are kind of like, oh, like a good, like, medium average weight puzzle for the most part.
Yeah, it's always interesting. Difficulty is impossible. I'll see people commenting about the games, and for a given game, there will be people saying, this is way harder than any unlock game. And the same game, these are trivially easy. Why don't you? Yeah, because it's just...
It's because different people have different puzzles that they are better at.
Yeah, what are your skills? Yeah. So like you mentioned, these have English language wordplay, which is something that the other games don't, because they're trying to be international. So that's going to appeal to certain people and not others. And what you were saying, Ambie, about puzzle hunts is not accidental. That's a lot of the inspiration there too.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you play puzzle hunts.
Yeah, I would. I think that's a perfect description for people who know what they are, is that it's just, it's an escape room style game with just a little bit of puzzle hunt flavor added to it. Actually, as part of the Kickstarter you mentioned, we'll be running an actual puzzle hunt as part of that for backers. So through the backer updates. So that'll be a little step up in difficulty from these games, but not as high as your typical actual puzzle hunt.
Yeah. Cool. In our Discord, we have a channel for puzzle hunts, and so sometimes we participate in puzzle hunts together. I don't have much time to help out, but there are a few people who like it, so that's neat.
So, obviously, you said the design constraints have both been, you know, a blessing and a curse in some ways with the 18 cards, but have you dabbled in or considered designing larger boxed escape room games now that you've made so many of the smaller ones?
It's come up a little bit. I think that it's a fairly densely populated space in general, and one of the benefits of keeping the format has been that it has kind of carved out a niche that helps with not competing directly against the big dogs, sort of. So yeah, I've looked into some possibilities, but usually I've done those types of things more as events than products. So I'll run puzzle competitions at conventions sometimes and that kind of thing. And that's usually how I work with that sort of creative outlet.
That's cool. So kind of along the same lines, has there been any notable puzzles or specific things that you wanted to include in any of the Holiday Hijinks games that you just couldn't make fit?
Oh, yeah. And I have a list that I keep going back to, because like maybe I can find a small version of this. So these games have more, how to say it, more overt puzzles than some of the other ones. One thing is that the smaller the package, the less room there is to make everything super thematic and natural. So when you're in a well-done physical escape room, everything feels like it could be in that place. And then you scale it down to the bigger production boxed games like the Werewolf Experiment you mentioned, or Box One, or one of those, where they have a lot of artifacts to use to keep you in. And then you kind of scale down from there to unlock, where they try to do that with... a big deck of cards with lots of objects and things to interact with. And as it gets smaller and smaller, there's less room. You can't spend the room doing world building. You got to spend the room on puzzles. Yeah. So I don't find myself cutting a lot of puzzle content, but there are other things that I really like in some larger games where the clues are hidden in plain sight and you don't notice them until your attention's drawn to them. That's very hard to do in 18 cards because you're paying attention to everything.
I'll
admit, in the first couple that I played, I was missing small details that then when I came back, I was like, what? Like, this is important? I didn't know that was important. But after I've played a couple of them now, I know, I'm like, this stuff will matter at some point later, probably. But then I still just move on and do whatever. I've always kind of been a little befuddled by the fact that physical escape room businesses haven't done more as far as like retail is concerned with boxed escape room games. Mm-hmm. I mean, for one, they could just buy stock of the existing stuff that is out there, right? And just sell it at their business. But to me, if they have these licenses that they've already gotten a hold of to make the physical escape rooms in their businesses, like one of the chains, which is now escaping me, but one of the popular chains that's all over the US has like Scooby-Doo as a license and Star Trek as a license and things. And I'm just like, how neat would it be and how easy of an upsell would it be for them if people came out of the Scooby-Doo room and then they had a little 18 card Scooby-Doo game that they could sell to the people after the fact as like a coda to the thing they just did, like a little add-on, whatever. Like, I feel like that would just be such an easy thing to do. And I've never seen any physical escape rooms. Like, I've seen a couple selling physical escape games, but not pushing them very hard. And I don't understand that.
Yeah, it seems a natural fit.
Yeah. So speaking of physical escape rooms, I imagine that you probably enjoy those as well. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I am not someone who, I mean, I think there are tiers of people who indulge in that hobby to different degrees. I am not of the sort that will travel to places to go seek out an escape room, but I have done most of the ones that are available in Grand Rapids here, which is a good number, and I do really enjoy those, but I find that it is just way easier to do the home versions most of the time. And you know, things like the puzzle hunts we were talking about are a good way to get kind of the larger scale of activity without having to spend a ton of money and drive to another place to, because you know, they're hard to set up and hard to run, and they don't tend to turn over different rooms very often. So if you want new experiences, you're going to have to travel.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah, Ambie has a spreadsheet of all of the escape rooms she and Toby have done. And I don't know, what's the list up to now?
Well, Toby's done more than me now because he's gone for some with work and we have kids. So I kind of stopped, but let me check. Toby's done 38 and I've done 31 physical ones.
That's awesome.
I have it split out. There's online escape rooms and then escape room type things we've done 8 of, which aren't like actually escape rooms, but they were like made by escape room companies and like adjacent to escape rooms.
Scavenger hunty things, that kind of
stuff.
Or
like more story driven, or like a... There was one that was like a time loop thing. So it wasn't really an escape room. It was more like interacting with the actor. A little different.
Immersive theater stuff.
Yeah.
Nice.
So yeah, what can you tell us about the Kickstarter that you all have going on right now?
Yeah, sure. So this is a campaign for the next 3 entries in the Holiday Hijinks series. This will be 10, 11, and 12. It's going to be The Leprechaun Larceny and The New Year Nightmare and the Krampus Caper. So
now we know what they are.
Yes, now you know what they are.
I do love the
New Year's is a holiday that hasn't been done.
Yeah. So it'll be for those three games as a package. There'll also be a level, of course, for all 12, and they'll come in a nice collector's box so you can store them all more nicely than just these little loose packs of cards. And like I mentioned, there is going to be a puzzle hunt that's run as part of the campaign. So if you back at any level, even the just looking level, you get access to all those puzzles. And this is going to be a non-competitive puzzle hunt, so there isn't a time limit or anything to worry about. You'll grab a team if you want to and work through that story. So that should be at least a game's worth of content that's delivered that way as well.
Awesome. Oh. Well, I am sure that a lot of our listeners, well, we know we have a lot of Escape Room fans that listen to us, so I'm sure they're going to want to visit the Kickstarter page. So the link will be in our show notes. And I did want to mention, we did not specify this earlier, but for those of you that have not played this series before, I think Ambie kind of briefly mentioned this, but the games are replayable. Like, whereas the exit games, often components get destroyed when you play them, there are cards in some of these holiday hijinks that you could theoretically write on or do things with, but almost always I've been able to manage not doing that. So that way, if I want to play it again later, like, or pass it off to a friend or whatever, I'm able to do that. My friend Kathy and I have passed a couple of these games back and forth between each other over the past few years, and now I'm excited to give her the Groundhog Gambit. She's going to listen to this episode and be very excited because she knows she's going to get it from me now. But yeah, so just in case anybody cares about destructibility, because I know that is a thing for some people with escape room games. So yeah, Jonathan, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Where can our listeners find more about you, what you're working on? Like, if they want to interact with you online, where can they go to do that?
I have kind of given up on the state of social media these days. So the best place
I don't blame you.
Plus places to find me. If you go to thechaffers.com/news, there are links there to either sign up to my monthly email newsletter where I send out a puzzle pack every month, and also a link to my Discord where I will also do some free puzzles every once in a while throughout the month as the mood strikes.
That's awesome. Cool. Well, yes, we will put those links in our show notes as well. But again, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been an honor.
And that's it for this week's Board Game Blitz. Visit our website, boardgameblitz.com, for more content and links. This episode was sponsored by Gray Fox Games. Visit grayfoxgames.com today to order your new copies of Clans of Midgard and Reavers of Midgard, the card game. And don't forget that Blitzketeers get 20% off non-exclusive items by using the code BGBLITZ24 at checkout. Join the Blitzketeer community on Discord for game nights, discussions, and more by following the link in the show notes. Support the show by leaving us a rating and review on your podcast provider. And if you like us a lot and want to support us monetarily and get some cool perks, check out our Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/boardgameblitz today. Our theme song was composed by Andrew Morrow. Until next time, if I could escape and just create a game with 18 cards, I don't think it would be that hard. Bye, everyone!